empty, the statues having been borne within. Before several of the others, worshippers knelt in late prayer. He entered the inner courtyard. An ascetic was seated on a prayer mat before the statue of Ganesha. He too seemed to qualify as a statue, making no visible movements. Four oil lamps flickered about the yard, their dancing light serving primarily to accentuate the shadows that lay upon most of the shrines. Small votive lights cast a faint illumination upon some of the statues. Tathagatha crossed the yard and stood facing the towering figure of Kali, at whose feet a tiny lamp blinked. Her smile seemed a plastic and moving thing as she regarded the man before her. Draped across her outstretched hand, looped once about the point of her dagger, lay a crimson strangling cord. Tathagatha smiled back at her, and she seemed almost to frown at that moment. "It is a resignation, my dear," he stated. "You have lost this round." She seemed to nod in agreement. "I am pleased to have achieved such a height of recognition in so short a period of time," he continued. "But even if you had succeeded, old girl, it would have done you little good. It is too late now. I have started something which you cannot undo. Too many have heard the ancient words. You had thought they were lost, and so did I, but we were both wrong. The religion by which you rule is very ancient, goddess. But my protest is also that of a venerable tradition. So call me a Protestant, and remember, now I am more than a man. Good night." He left the temple and the shrine of Kali, where the eyes of Yama had been fixed upon his back. It was many months before the miracle occurred, and when it did not seem a miracle, for it had grown up slowly about them. Ryld, who had come out of the north as the winds of spring blew across the land, wearing death upon his arm and the black fire within his eyes. Ryld, with the white brows and pointed ears, spoke one afternoon, after the spring had passed, when the long days of summer hung warm beneath the bridge of the gods. He spoke, in that unexpected baritone, to answer a question asked him by a traveler. The man asked him a second question, and then a third. He continued to speak, and some of the other monks and several pilgrims gathered about him. The answers following the questions, which now came from all of them, grew longer and longer, for they became parables, examples, allegories. Then they were seated at his feet, and his dark eyes became strange pools, and his voice came down as from heaven, clear and soft, melodic and persuasive. They listened, and then the travelers went their way. But they met and spoke with other travelers upon the road, so that, before the summer had passed, pilgrims coming to the Purple Grove were asking to meet this disciple of the Buddha's and to hear his words also. Tathagatha shared the preaching with him. Together, they taught of the way of the Eightfold Path, the glory of Nirvana, the illusion of the world, and the chains that the world lays upon a man. And then there were times when even the soft-spoken Tathagatha listened to the words of his disciple, who had digested all of the things he had preached, had meditated long and fully upon them, and now, as though he had found entrance to a secret sea, dipped with his steel-hard hand into places of hidden waters, and then sprinkled a thing of truth and beauty upon the heads of the hearers. Summer passed. There was no doubt now that there were two who had received enlightenment, Tathagatha and his small disciple, whom they called Sugata. It was even said that Sugata was a healer, and that when his eyes shone strangely, and the icy touch of his hands came upon a twisted limb, that limb grew straight again. It was said that a blind man's vision had suddenly returned to him during one of Sugata's sermons. There were two things in which Sugata believed: the way of salvation and Tathagatha, the Buddha.
"Illustrious one," he said to him one day, "my life was empty until you revealed to me the true path. When you received your enlightenment, before you began your teaching, was it like a rush of fire and the roaring of water and you everywhere and a part of everything? The clouds and the trees, the animals in the forest, all people, the snow on the mountaintop and the bones in the field?"
"Yes," said Tathagatha.
"I also know the joy of all things," said Sugata.
"Yes, I know," said Tathagatha.
"I see now why you once said that all things come to you, to have brought such a doctrine into the world. I can see why the gods were envious. Poor gods, they are to be pitied. But you know all things." Tathagatha did not reply.
When the winds of spring blew again across the land, the year having gone full cycle since the arrival of the second Buddha, there came one day from out of the heavens a fearful shrieking. The citizens of Allendale turned out into their streets to stare up at the sky. The sudras in the fields put by their work and looked upward. In the great temple on the hill there was a sudden silence. In the purple grove beyond the town, the monks turned their heads. It paced the heavens, the one who was born to rule the wind. From out of the north it came, green and red, yellow and brown. Its glide was a dance, its way was the air. There came another shriek, and then the beating of mighty pinions, as it climbed past clouds to become a tiny dot of black. And then it fell, like a meteor, bursting into flame, all of its colors blazing and burning bright. As it grew and grew, beyond all belief that anything could live at that size, that pace, that magnificence. Half spirit, half bird,